So some of these are no-brainers, but, you know, when you're at home, I've talked about working your pajamas quite a lot. Maybe that's because I did that for a while. But you need to have a regular routine. You need to have regular office hours. Our staff are required to work. If they're at home, they're required to be logged on during their regular office hours. I think you need to get up and take a shower and get dressed, personally. You need to have a dedicated workspace. This is also important for confidentiality issues. You don't need to have your papers all over the kitchen table where husband, children, neighbors, the refrigerator repair guy can see them, and we'll talk about that later. But have the things also at home that you need. I went out and bought an office chair at Office Depot when I started working at home because I knew I wasn't going to be able to sit for long periods of time in my very uncomfortable dining room chairs. So do those things that can help you practice successfully from home. So communications, this is the rule, the Texas rule. And the main things I want you to know is that it's a reasonableness standard. It's not perfection, it's reasonableness. But you are required to keep the client reasonably informed and explain things to them so that they can make informed decisions about their case. So I always say, you know, you're not required to answer every email, every text, every phone call. Again, it's a reasonableness standard, but please don't ignore your client's requests for information. That is just going to lead you down a path that is not going to work out well for you. And again, as I said before, probably your communications working remotely are increased because the clients want to make sure they're anxious. They want to make sure that you are still attending to their legal matters even though you're not physically in the office. You know, do you give out your cell phone so that they can reach you? The reason I'm harping on this is the failure to communicate is probably the thing that I deal with the most in responding to state bar grievances. And it's, again, because if you're not communicating, then there are misunderstandings. And so you don't want the client to get to the point where they're so frustrated because they haven't heard from you that they haul off and file grievance when actually you've been doing exactly what you should have been doing all along. And I would also say document, document, document. Try and, you know, keep, if you're not emailing with a client, maybe you're having phone calls, which that's great too, but take note and document those things so that you can show later that you were communicating. This next point, beware of unfortunate email communications. I give almost a whole talk on this. Emails are great. They're fast. They're efficient. We all use them. But don't lose your formality and your professionalism when you're emailing with clients, with opposing counsel, even in your office. Don't joke, don't disparage, you know, other people in your office or judges or opposing counsel. All those things are going to be Exhibit 1, either to a grievance or maybe a malpractice case. So they need to remain professional. I always say if you wouldn't put it on your letterhead and put it in an envelope and mail it, do not write it in an email. I also really don't like texts with clients about substantive legal matters. There is a lot of context that is less lost over text messaging, and people are very, very informal. It causes a lot of problems. I think one of the best tools for communications, by the way, is the telephone. Because when you are emailing with somebody, there's, again, context that can be lost, and sometimes there are misunderstandings. A phone call can solve a lot of problems. So confidentiality is the big thing with respect to remote practice. And cannot be emphasized enough that you have a duty to protect client information from unauthorized disclosure or unauthorized access. You know, in general, we cannot disclose client information. And so the model rules and the Texas rules talk about making reasonable efforts to prevent access and disclosure and taking reasonable precautions in transmitting that information. ABA Formal Opinion 477R from 2017, again, this is pre-pandemic, but it's a great source for what you should do, said, well, we're not going to tell you that you have to have a firewall or you have to do this. It's a fact-specific approach. There's no hard and fast rules, but you're going to consider a variety of factors. You're going to go through a process to analyze what you're doing. You're going to assess risks. You're going to implement appropriate ways to deal with those risks. You're going to verify that your safeguards were implemented, and then you're going to update it and make sure that it's updated. There's not going to be a rule violation for unauthorized or inadvertent disclosure or access if you have undertaken reasonable efforts. So, you know, these are the factors that you're going to consider. Obviously, you know, you can't go around putting safeguards in place that prohibit your ability to practice law efficiently and communicate effectively with clients. That's silly. So it's, you know, again, reasonableness standards. And you're not going to do something that's cost prohibitive. I remember when encryption first came out, and you would get like an encrypted email from somebody, and then you had to go through this whole process to like even see what it said, and then it said something really innocuous, like the hearing on the motion for summary judgment is set next week, and it was just kind of a weird deal. So that's not required, but you're gonna look at the spectrum.